We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to this special news quiz edition from the Edinburgh Festival Fringe. We start with a cutting from the BBC News Wales website read by Zeb Soans.
Floods close Noah's Ark Children's Hospital.
And our thanks to Nicholas Ely for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Susan Kalman and Matt Ford. And opposite them on my left, Justin Edwards and Jeremy Hardy. Susan, have a listen to this. Lady Madonna, children at your feet, wonder how you managed to make ends meet. Susan, who should have kept mum about other people's lifestyles?
George Osborne has a policy, he's announced a policy, whereby people who are working will get up to £1,200 extra per child. But if you are a stay-at-home mum, you will get nothing because it is a lifestyle choice that you've made. And therefore you don't deserve... Oh, there's an audible gasp. It's a lifestyle choice, much like being a homosexualist is for me.
Sorry, I had no idea there was a choice.
Yes, yes. I made the decision very early on whilst watching Cagney and Lacey, and... People with children will have £1,200, except if you stay at home. And the argument is, if you stay at home, sometimes you don't have a choice. It's wrong to say that everybody that stays at home with their children, it's a lifestyle choice. And why should people earning a lot of money, both of the parents out at work, not get the £1,200? It's not one of his most popular policies, I don't
know. No, but I mean, who hasn't sat with their head in their hands, covered in their child's milky vomit, surrounded by dirty nappies, thinking, I am so enjoying this lifestyle choice?
I think it's discriminating on a number of levels. As you know, Sandy, I have three children. Cats. And the government never helps me out. The government never says, here, have some money for the responsibilities that you have, and they need school shoes.
Considering Osborne was sent to boarding school at 18 months old and came home again at the age of 21, he's possibly not the best person to be talking about this, is he?
It's hard being a working mum. I've seen in the back of my mind, I'm always thinking about, you know, what are my children doing right now and thinking, oh God, I hope they don't bother me about it. Have you got children, Matt? I can't remember.
No, I haven't. But I don't have too much of a problem with this, to be honest.
Oh, no, right.
It makes sense to me that you would try and incentivise people to work.
Right.
So you would help them with their childcare costs.
So, yeah,
not necessarily.
It doesn't seem that controversial to me.
But the issue is that the stay-at-home mum is not going to get the money. Maybe she'd like a little break, do you think?
Well, yeah, but, you know, they're happy chilling out.
Matt, I don't know if you've been in Scotland very long. But
I'm not sure you've been in women very often.
Now, I should clarify, I was raised by a stay-at-home mum.
Were you?
And as far as I'm concerned, that's reward enough. She got to share in the joy of seeing me every day.
Mm. Do you want to come round and look after my kids tomorrow? It'll be such a reward for you. Really. You'll have a glorious time.
I have to say, childcare was very simple for my parents. Every morning a man came past the house playing a pipe, took me off to play inside a mountain.
I found that this is just on a practical note. The house I'm staying in Edinburgh this year has got a jacuzzi in it, which is, I know, yeah, living the dream. It doesn't work, unfortunately. So what it is just a very, very deep bath.
Get the kids in it.
Yeah, I know, but they can't get out. this is the thing. I'm not saying I'd put water in it, but I could put them in there for the day, and there's really, I don't think they'd get, you know, I could put some carrots or something in for sustenance and plaything.
It's mend and make do. I don't have a jacuzzi in my flat because I'm not living the dream. It was raining today and I just sat in a wheelie bin. Same thing.
Yeah. That's a day-to-day activity for a Glaswegian lady.
But it's a strange notion that you should necessarily be incentivising people to work rather than paying them to stay at home. There are some people, mentioning no names, George Osborne, who you would pay to stay at home, aren't there? Let's be honest, most of us would say, let's give him the same salary to just watch Bargain Hunt all day.
Chancellor George Osborne has announced a new system of childcare vouchers which will not be available to stay-at-home mothers who he described as having made a lifestyle choice. Osborne pointed out that while being a stay-at-home mum is a lifestyle choice, being an out-of-touch, massively rich git is genetic. The Tories intend to combine the childcare vouchers with a married couple's tax break in order to help the maximum number... of people. Osborne justified extending the vouchers to families earning as much as £300,000 a year, pointing out that the swimming pools in those second homes don't heat themselves. 2 points to Susan. Matt, who's been talking mumbo-jumbo about Bongo Bongo?
There's a chap called Godfrey Bloom, who is a UKIP member of the European Parliament, and Godfrey speaks in his own unique way about his views on the world. And recently he was talking about international aid, and he outlined his concerns that perhaps some of the countries that Britain gives aid to don't spend it effectively. He said that they waste it on Ray-Bans and Ferraris, and he described the countries that we helped, he referred to one of them in particular as Bongo Bongo Land. He was chastised by his party, not for saying it, but for saying it in public, which apparently was a sort of break of the code of UKIP, that it's absolutely fine to hold these views, but just not in front of cameras. Although it was ridiculous, but the problem is I'm going to alienate myself even further.
No, darling, they're on your side after the childcare thing.
Yeah. I was just playing devil's advocate, I just wanted to break the consensus. I quite like Nigel Farage.
Right.
I have a soft spot for him, yeah. A few of you... I should make...
I know I'm Glaswegian, but I can't take you all on.
I would never vote for Nigel Farage, but I have met him a few times.
Have you?
He's a very charismatic man, and I just think there's not much difference in politics at the moment, and I think we should celebrate it where it exists, which oddly is something that UKIP don't want to do. There's something about Nigel Farage that is very charismatic, and there's a sort of rascal personality that I quite like. I interviewed him recently. No matter what you ask him, he never ums and ahs. He's a really definite... You could say to Nigel, what did you have for breakfast? And he'd go, tea toast and a telegraph, Great British breakfast. He's on it the whole time, right? And I sort of respect his skill, but we were talking about climate change, of which I think it's fair to say he's a sceptic. And this is what he said. He said, look, people talk about the greenhouse effect, but have you seen a greenhouse? I mean, stuff actually grows in there. Which I said, Nigel... have you ever tried living in a greenhouse? And he went, fair point. I said, well, hang on, I've just undone your environmental policy with a quip. This is not good politics. And unfortunately, you know, for UKIP, their policies are quite absurd. But the person, Godfrey Bloom is not, I can't say I'm a particular fan of, but Nigel Farage, I think, is a welcome break in British politics.
I think it's important to see Bloom's remarks in context, the context being that he's an odious reactionary bigot. It could be argued that it's important that racists do say racist things, because that way you know where you are. It saves you so much time. If somebody actually says something racist, you think, oh God, you're a racist. Okay, well, that cuts to the chase. I won't really bother to continue this relationship in any way. But you could waste years talking to somebody and listening to their opinions and thinking, well, they seem like an intelligent person with a point of view. And then you just think, oh, sorry, you're a tusser, aren't you? Tell you what, could I never see you again? Is that all right with you?
But Bloom said the idea of him being racist was laughable because he has a Polish wife. Is that typical, coming over here, taking jobs away from hard-working British wives? Senior UKIP politician Godfrey Bloom has landed in hot water after saying that Britain should not be sending aid to Bongo Bongo Land. Mr. Bloom originally said his comments were not offensive, as Bongo Bongo Land was not a real place, a fact that disappointed many UKIP members who were in the middle of trying to book a holiday there. UKIP chiefs have asked MEP Godfrey Bloom to stop saying Bongo Bongo Land, the dismay of a percussion store in Luton who reported business has never been better. 2 points to Matt. Justin, who got a fraternal warning to mind their language?
Is this David and Miliband? And
it's
David Miliband who's written an article, or a paper, a huge article in the New Statesman, talking about, I don't know, sort of wither for centre-left politics, where, you know, it's frankly boring. I read it out of a sense of, oh, that's, yeah. But there's so few pictures in the New Statesman, only really. I buy it for the horoscopes, mostly. And it's not... Yeah, it's he's written
the Reader's Wives section's rather good.
It's extraordinary, yeah. Mm. It's all text. But no, so he's written an article, a very, you know, sort of intelligent but slightly boring article about sort of the future of politics, which has been leapt on by a lot of papers, well, mostly the Telegraph, saying, this is a huge broadsided Ed Miliband. Look at this, you know, read between the lines, look what he's saying here as he's slamming into his brother. And at no point does he say anything, really. The only thing he mentions is pre-distribution, which is a policy that Ed Miliband has floated, using which is the idea that you pay people on lower wages more money rather than giving them benefits later on. So the only phrase in this entire article says pre-distribution is not a word that would fit on an electoral pledge. Now, in terms of sniping at your brother, that's hardly up there with, oh, you smell of poo and I hope you die, which is what... which is what he would have... Yeah, I grew up with two brothers, and I tell you, if you really want to knock the wind out of their sails, don't write a long-winded article saying, well, do you know what? Actually, I do think that the welfare state needs some reform. You should put their Action Man on a bonfire. Something a bit more effective.
It was hugely dull. Mm. And I think, Justin, you're absolutely right. If you want to snipe at your brother, you don't write a giant article that no one understands. I mean, it's like the most boring and dull episode of Dallas that anyone could possibly have written, with two brothers who, instead of actually doing something to them, they just write letters to each other and stick them under each other's doors at night.
I'm getting very fond of Ed Miliband. I mean, I don't want him to be Prime Minister, but he's like a sort of three-legged calf on Animal Hospital. Do you know what I mean? You want him to survive, despite the way Mother Nature has stacked the odds against him.
There is a narrative that says that the wrong brother won and it should have been David, but it's important to remember one of the reasons why David didn't win, which is that he was Foreign Secretary at a time when it emerged that Britain was intimately connected with extraordinary rendition. Now, you might say that his brother's speeches are a form of torture in themselves, and that listening to Ed trying to concoct some kind of mythical state of benign and responsible capitalism is very much like being flown to Bagram Air Base with a bag on your head. But that would be to trivialise the very serious matter of extraordinary rendition for the purposes of a cheap quip, and that would be shameful.
I think that Ed Miliband has more of the look of, you know, when you go to, well, I go to, Sandy, you don't go to necessarily the supermarkets I go to, but to some of the supermarkets I go to, they always employ...
You have people.
Mm-hmm. They employ a greeter. He says, hello, the canoes are over there. And I think Ed Miliband has got the look of someone who's been trained to greet people at the door of a supermarket but doesn't actually have any other qualification.
I mean, there are a number of issues I have with Ed Miliband, and there isn't time in the month to go through them, but his voice underlines for me his lack of authority. I can't get over the fact that he sounds like Tony Blair with a cold, which, you know, Tony Blair used to sound like that. But as the winter fuel crisis hit in and he didn't pick his prescriptions and he got more banged up, he ended up sounding like that. Come on. But I want to talk about it. I don't know what happens at the back of his throat. But I can't get on with Ed Miliband whatsoever, and I find him a deeply frustrating individual. And actually, the reason why David Miliband lost the leadership election was because his leadership campaign was dreadful. And I speak as a Blairite who should have supported him. And the pair of them, frankly, alienated people not just inside the Labour Party, but in the wider country as well. And I think most of the country isn't necessarily even bothered about David or Ed. They're not bothered about either of them. And I think the tide went out on the Labour Party after the last election, and we've been left with these kids in charge, and Ed Miliband doesn't have any authority, and it breaks my heart.
Well, I find it really hard to tell them apart. David's the one who isn't leading the Labour Party, and so is Ed. David Miliband has been accused of sniping at his brother after suggesting in a New Statesman article that the electorate do not understand Ed's language surrounding pre-distribution. David implied his brother needed to be more careful about his language, saying that anyone who believes in something called pre-distribution has to be living in Bongo Bongo Land. Since leaving Westminster earlier this year, David has been working in New York for the International Rescue Committee, where he reports to Jeff Tracy under the codename Brains. 2 points to Justin. Jeremy, which first years unexpectedly met the First Minister? We're in Scotland.
Yeah, Alex Alex Salmond, who's your pretend leader. Who's First Minister of Scotland. He turned up at a school And instead of, you know, blatant electioneering, because there's a by-election coming up and he wanted to show solidarity with kids, he just said, I just thought it would be cool to turn up and hang out with some kids and it would be great, because I love kids and kids are great. I had no idea that the media would be alerted by the press release that went out this morning. That's your accent, in case you're confused, audience. And the SNP basically said, look, Alex Salmond is so rock and roll that he's going to a primary school today to hang with some kids, except you don't probably call them primary schools, in you probably call them tatty schools or something. Weird nonsense. Roars. Yeah, so Alex turned up with some, hang with some kids, and the council was mad because he hadn't been CRB checked, and you can't go into schools if you haven't been checked out.
Well, the councils were furious. They accused Alex Salmond of creating a smoke screen around the issue. How lovely. Smoked salmon. Okay.
Don't go, Scotland. Seriously. Seriously, we don't want, you know, it's like education. Single-sex education is good for girls and bad for boys. And independence for Scotland is good for you, but terribly bad for us.
Yes, we love you. Don't leave.
Yeah, because and then England will go on some awful sort of soul-searching thing to find our identity. You know, and you've already got strong identity because you're, you know, you're insular and small-minded. Whereas, you know, we're outgoing in a slightly bombing way.
First Minister of Scotland, Alex Salmond, has become embroiled in a bitter row with Aberdeen Council. Mr Salmond is accused of making an unauthorised appearance at Bramblebrae Primary School in the run-up to a local by-election. The school has said that it was grateful for Mr Salmond's last-minute appearance, as Widow Twankey had pulled out due to ill health. The SNP hotly denied accusations that the primary school visit was in any way political, although they have now issued proposals to lower the referendum voting age to 7. At the end of round one, the scores are Susan and Matt have got 4 points, but in the lead are Justin and Jeremy with 5. We start round two with a cutting from the Energy Savings Trust website.
You can save considerably on the amount of mains water you use by watering your garden with water from your butt.
Yeah. And our thing.
Yeah, there's always an upside to malaria, isn't it?
Ah, thanks to James Dutch for sending us that. Susan, why is Uncle Sam refusing to talk to Mother Russia?
This is a story about the American president, Wee Barry Obama. as we call him, Wee Baza. There's a G20 meeting in Russia, but he has cancelled a one-on-one with Vladimir Putin because of the Snowden situation, because he did an interview where he said it would be a waste of everyone's time. He was also asked about why Vladimir Putin always looks so depressed all the time. You mean, you see those pictures and Barack Obama's just like that, hiya! Like fawns, two thumbs up, hiya! And Vladimir Putin looks like a 13-year-old boy that's been made to watch his sister's dancing display.
He does actually sometimes look happy, Putin, when he's doing something like wrestling with a giant octopus or biting a badger's head off in one of his strangely homoerotic posters. Because the other issue is of course, there's all this rampant anti-gay legislation going through in Russia about promoting homosexuality, you know, that you're promoting what they call not traditional. That means, you know, electric. Not acoustic sex, you know. Untraditional with electric guitars sex.
But it's one of these, whenever any of these kind of anti-gay laws, they always focus on kind of the sexual nature. They're obsessed with the sex that gay people have. The House of Lords, absolutely obsessed with how much sex gay... Oh, we're all having sex. I'm having sex right now. It's terrible. And actually, when I watched all those debates in the House of Lords about how much sex gay people... All the time. Just all the time. I just felt like I was letting the side down. Do you know how difficult it is to have sex with three cats? Not with three...
Honestly, no. Genuinely, no.
I just mean if you've got three cats, because when two of them sleep behind your head and one at the foot of them, you don't want to disturb them. You end up just going, shall we try tomorrow? Aye, we'll try tomorrow then.
But honestly, that's different from a straight relationship. We don't have the excuse of cats.
That is a valid point that people always talk about sexuality in purely sexual terms, and it's an emotional link. I mean, presumably, if you're a gay man, one of the major attractions is being with somebody and knowing what they're thinking. Do you know what I mean? That must be quite amazing. Do you know what I mean? To actually be sitting with somebody and you can, or, and oh, the truth is that neither of you are thinking anything. Because when you're in a heterosexual relationship, you know, the woman will say to the man, "What are you thinking?"
Ooh,
and not thinking. And not believe that he genuinely is not and never has thought anything other than, shall we get a takeaway, for the entire duration of their relationship.
Do you ever make up what you're thinking about? Do you ever go, "Oh, I was thinking about philosophy or something," or to just go, "Nothing"? Like, if I said to you, like, earlier on, what are you thinking of, would you make something up or just be really honest that your mind was a blank, Jeremy?
What?
Do you remember those posters? Which election was it when the Conservatives had those posters that said, "Are you thinking what we're thinking?"
2005.
2005, and I was always thinking about biscuits. It was never... I thought, well, I hope not.
I mean, in a quest to further alienate the audience, I feel like we're being...
Can I just say, Matt, you're my new favourite, OK?
I feel like we've been a little harsh on David Cameron, because you're right, at the time he supported Section 28, but he's just had a massive row with his own party about bringing in the gay marriage.
Yeah, fair play to him.
So fair play to him. You know, he's changed his position, he's pro-gay marriage. The same can't be said for a lot of his MPs. So there's a guy called David Davies, who came up with the best defence for his position on gay marriage, where at first he said that, I think heterosexual parents would rather have heterosexual children. Which is sort of like primary school maths book logic of heterosexual plus heterosexual. I mean, it's got to be a heterosexual. But I'm not sure where he thinks gay people come from, in all honesty, but his defence when someone called him a homophobe, he said, "I'm not a homophobe. I used to be a semi-professional boxer."
No.
And it gets better. He says, "And when I was, I fought a gay man."
Well.
But what sort of argument's that? "I'm not homophobic, mate. I tried to knock one of them out." Incredible.
I'm a homosexual with three grown-up heterosexual children, and I look at them and I think, where did I go wrong? Nobody to decorate the house.
Years ago, when I very first came to Scotland, which was 1984, I was talking to a gay man. I said, "What's it like being gay in Scotland?" And he said, "Well, you have to understand, Jeremy, that in Scotland, sex isn't done, it's committed."
Do you know that joke about two nuns in a cab in Edinburgh? And one of them says, "I've not come this way before." She says, "No, it's the cobbles." Oh, my word!
I haven't told many people this before, but my mum was a nun before she had me.
Was she?
Yeah.
Oh.
I just feel like I'm getting an insight into her life here.
Abelard and Eloise. Did she marry a priest?
No, she married a male doctor.
Did she?
She'd left the convent.
Oh,
well, at that point, yeah.
Barack Obama has cancelled a meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin after Russia's decision to grant asylum to intelligence leaker Edward Snowden, as well as concerns over Russia's stance on human rights issues. Speaking on The Tonight Show, Mr. Obama accused Moscow of adopting a Cold War mentality. A Kremlin spokesman refuted his accusation, saying, "The eagle flies at dawn." Obama has refused to engage in talks with Putin, but the two will be reunited at the potentially awkward G20 summit in what critics are already calling the best romantic comedy of the summer. In his first term in office, Obama had attempted to reset relations with Moscow, a complicated process which involves turning Moscow on its side and using a pencil to hold down a tiny button on the back. The refusal of Obama to conduct talks with Putin also had the effect of strengthening Russia's relationship with China. Oh, good. For a moment there, I thought we were all in trouble. So that's worked out well.
Did your mum ever speak, or had she taken a vow of silence?
Well...
Is that why she couldn't say, "No, Doctor, no"?
Just put your habit off, let's take a real look at your sister.
I almost didn't mention it. I wish I hadn't.
No, darling, you must come on the show many times because we're never going to forget. So, Sister Ford, 2 points to Susan. Justin, which Burke put the twit in Twitter this week?
This will be Stephen Burkhoff.
Yes.
Who has been interviewed about a range of things. He's up here in Edinburgh doing a show, and I think he'd come off stage full of bile and vitriol about the world in particular, and unleashed an extraordinary volley of insults about loads of people and how terrible television was and how awful everything was that he's not in. And no, so I think he's, you know, I like that, you know. Do you like physical theatre? Berkoff only asked. I do generally think he's a very fascinating performer, but I don't think he's a particularly good commentator on social media somehow. But he's said that Twitter is, you know, incredibly banal and pointless and terrible, and he's absolutely right. It is. But I don't think anyone on there knows that it is, you know, it's not a good tool for marketing, it's not a good tool for anything, really. It is
gardening.
Just a bit, not a good tool for gardening, no. Absolutely. That's a dibber, not a Twitter. But it's very... I mean, it is, you know, at the best it is ill-informed opinion written by drunks, which is not far from traditional print journalism.
But it is astonishing. Justin Bieber is the most followed person on Twitter in the world.
Yes.
And just before we came on, I had a quick look, and he had just tweeted, "Naps are the best."
Well, it's that kind of exciting insight.
Yes.
Which is why so many people do.
I'm looking out at our Radio 4 demographic, who are thinking, what on earth is wrong with someone saying naps are the best? I thought that shows rare insight for a man so young.
I mean, I've had some extraordinary Twitter abuse at the hands of the fans of N-Dubs, Jeremy's favourite band. There was... I was trending on Twitter about 2 years ago. I thought, this is very exciting.
Is that good?
What have I done? Yes. Well, no. Yes and no. It just means that more people in the world are talking about you than they are about Justin Bieber at a given point, or were in the UK. And it was a different Justin Edwards, who is a grime DJ. Jeremy will explain and later. But he's a grime
very
DJ.
Very dirty dinner jacket.
Yes. And he's... And Justin Edwards, the grime DJ, who also goes under the name of MC Ultra, had released a sex tape online of him and Tulisa from N-Dubs. There was a lot of hate, a lot of haters, a lot of N-Dubs fans.
Is that not you, then?
Well,
I've told so many people. I know
really. No. Yeah, there are key facts about the tape itself, which clearly mean it's not me, Joe, but there are... But I did a lot of people coming on Twitter searching for Justin Edwards. Oh, that's him. Yep, right. And I got some quite glorious abuse from the fans of N-Dubs. The best one being, we're Dappy's mates, we're going to hunt you down, we're going to kill you. And I replied and said, I'm in John Lewis buying a baby monitor, come to the third floor. And they, I think they soon realised I wasn't that, although I did for 2 weeks have somebody who sent me consistent messages saying, no, we're going to hate you. And the great thing, you're a really bad grime DJ. I was going, well, she's got a point. I can't argue with that. Yes, you know, yes, you're absolutely right. I'm sorry, my last album was terrible.
I want to return to the good old days. If you wanted to abuse somebody, you had to write it down, tie it to a rock, and throw it through their window. Stephen Berkoff has weighed into the Twitter abuse debate. In a speech at the Edinburgh Fringe, he showed no sympathy for those abused online, saying, if I jump into a garbage bin, I can't complain that I've got rubbish all over me. Why on earth would Stephen Berkoff say something so headline-grabbingly controversial? Asked the publicist for his Edinburgh show, 2:30, Assembly Hall, until the 20th of August. Those who abuse others on social networking sites are called trolls, not to be confused with the mythical creature. One is short-tempered, idiotic and ugly, and the other is fictional. In response to abuse online, some Twitter users held a one-day Twitter silence, leading to horrifying scenes as thousands of people were suddenly unable to share what they'd eaten that day for breakfast. 2 points to Justin. Jeremy, who hopes that talks won't go with a bang?
Well, Iran, as a new president, Rouhani... And who has been making noises that the West find quite cordial. But, of course, it's a complicated situation because it's not only him. He's president, but Ayatollah Khamenei is the supreme leader. It's a bit like here, where we elect our prime minister, but ultimate authority is with the head of state, whom we don't elect because he's elected in America. But we don't know where this is going, but people are quite pleased. Whether it means that he will moderate Iran's, you know, abusive treatment of gay people or political dissidents or its Arab minority, we don't know. But it might mean that there isn't a war in the region, another one.
It's all about uranium enrichment, is that not right? And I don't know how you do it. How do you enrich uranium? Do you take it to the ballet and make it read Tolstoy? I don't know how you...
The reason I think we should be reassured by the new president of Iran, as we all know, he studied in Glasgow.
He went to university in Glasgow.
Did he?
And I think if anything will reassure the country and the world that he has learned the appropriate amount of diplomacy, is that he has spent time in Glasgow. I was at Buchanan Street bus station the other day. If you don't know it, it's much like the castle in Edinburgh. It's got the same gravitas and the local colour. I think he'll have taken a lot from the local colour. Learned about diplomacy, learned about how to really work his way through. I was at the bus station and a colourful local gentleman took off his belt, whirled it round his head and said, "I'm a helicopter!" I have great faith that during his time in Glasgow he will have seen such remarkable sights and deal with everything in a much less aggressive way than he might have previously. I think it'll have calmed him right down. You know, going to Greg's, getting a wee donut.
Iran's newly elected President Hassan Rouhani has called for negotiations with the international community about his country's nuclear program. Mr. Rouhani won a surprise victory in June's election, and for our listeners in Zimbabwe, a surprise victory is where the outcome is not decided 6 months in advance. Rouhani was accused of receiving soft questions after the announcement, an accusation he refuted. But if people really wanted to know, Niall is his favourite member of One Direction. Rouhani became president in July, which came as a disappointment to some who were hoping it would be Peter Capaldi. Can you believe that? Another white man, for God's sake. I was available.
I was hoping that you would be the new Doctor Who.
Yes!
And I would be your assistant, and then the Daily Mail would explode.
You and me doing that, you and me as assistant, everybody would believe we lived in the TARDIS. There's plenty of room.
I just wanted it for the moment that, you know, they do the regeneration and you would wake up and go, things have changed.
Yeah, that wasn't quite how I'd imagined it, but 2 points to Jeremy. Matt, who may have been too free with her fringe assessment?
This, I believe, is Nika Burns, who's the chair of Comedy Awards Committee, who decide every year who the funniest one person is in Edinburgh. And in an interview, I think, this week, she was talking about the Free Fringe. So the Edinburgh Festival obviously existed for a very long time, and the Free Fringe is a relatively modern development to try and counteract the fact that Edinburgh's very expensive for acts and for punters to come and perform at and to indeed pay to see the performances. And in an unguarded moment in this interview, she said that some customers will have, you know, pretty awful experiences, I think was a form of words that she used. You know, people are concerned about the disparity in quality, you know, and it does exist on the paid festival as well. You know, I saw, last year, I saw a man drink urine through a sock. But I also saw some bad stuff. So
I wasn't charging for that.
I saw the most amazing thing today. Honestly, best thing I've seen in Edinburgh for ages. Waverley Station's got an M&S Simply Food. It's fabulous.
In 2010, I did a show. I loved it. Everyone hated it. I still think it's quality. One day it'll make it. And I had to share the toilets with the audience. So after the show, I had to queue with my audience. And they hated me. And I remember there was a woman standing behind me once, and she gave me my ticket back. And I went, "Do you want the money?" And she went, "No, you've ruined everything." I think it was a bit, not everything. I've not ruined everything. I mean, I'd ruined our night, fair dues, but not everything.
I think it's an imposition on the people of Edinburgh, the festival, because you don't have to come here in August. In fact, it's, you know, I came here last year in May, and it was very nice, and it was charming, because Edinburgh people are very charming people. The very first time... No, it's true. Because the very first time when I was young and pretty, and I was doing a show, and I was in my early 20s, and you have to fly post, you know, your own shows, everything, and I went out at night with my little bucket of paste and posters to put on lampposts, and a big bunch of big shaven-headed lads started to approach me. I thought, oh, Christ, I'm obviously English. I'm obviously doing a show. I'm obviously small and puny. And these guys steamed up to me, and I'm standing there shaking with my bucket of paste. And one of them said, "I hope you realise that's against Edinburgh bylaws."
Actually, the only thing I don't like all the sexist, racist, homophobic material. Maybe I should drop it from my set. 32 years ago, Nika Burns and I were in a production of The Boyfriend together at the Nottingham Playhouse, and she was the speciality dancer. She did the tango, and she had quite a camp partner. And I remember one particular performance he got really fed up with, and he dropped her during the show and was heard to hiss at her, "Maybe a different career, love." Now she's in charge of comedy at Edinburgh. Organisers of the Edinburgh Comedy Awards, Nika Burns has been the talk of the fringe this week after suggesting free shows often disappoint audiences. There are 2,871 shows at this year's fringe, with something for everyone. Comedy for when you want to laugh, music for when you want to dance, and experimental theatre for when it's raining. 2 points to Matt. Jeremy, who's got a new plot down on the farm?
Is it the fact that, what's her name? Archer's fans are always upset because they think it's true. And they think this is awful, that rural Britain is being subverted by mixed-race transgendered people moving into the village with their plots, whereas it used to be marvellous. The Archers used to be just information about farming. It was actually just... Wasn't it just the Ministry of Agriculture just said, like, "Morning! Time to spread some muck! Right... Would you like some sound effects? All go on then. They give us plastic here. I was trying to do the sound of cups of tea and they give us plastic. But it was all like, "Oh, Captain was pleased." Oh, how do they speak? Arr! Oh, I don't know. Oh, weird, sort of random kind of Worcestershire stroke people who've had a stroke type accent that they that they speak. I don't know. It's rubbish, the Archers. Right, but the thing is, soaps like that should be nonsense. I used to like Brookside. More people died in Brookside in 10 years than in both World Wars. It was fantastic. Billy Corker would be abducted by aliens and probed, and terrorists would take over the street, and there'd be a siege, and the earth would open, and dinosaurs would rule the Liverpool area for a couple of days. But fantastic.
But what you don't understand about the Archers, Jeremy, is it isn't a soap opera. It's actually a 63-year-old experiment into the effects of inertia. It's, I love it. Without the Archers, I would never have discovered the pure joy of sitting in a traffic jam in total silence. I think it's the most fantastic... Don't get me started on front row. For an extra point, whose new job is Strictly Classified?
Oh. It's the most exciting news that there has ever been in the history of broadcasting, and I'm not even being sarcastic, and that is that on Radio 5 Live, a station I respect greatly but is full of men, Charlotte Green will be reading the football scores. Yeah. Charlotte Green, when you listen to the football results on 5 Live, it will be the voice of Charlotte Green. And there was a huge flurry of controversy, lots of people saying it was outrageous to have a woman reading out the football results. And there was a comment, I think it was on the BBC website, someone had commented and said, "It's terrible, a woman reading out the football results. Is nothing scared?" Because they'd missed it. Which kind of defeated the point of the comment. But personally speaking, not only do I think Charlotte's wonderful, but I think I'm going to tune in purely for the football results to hear Charlotte Green's beautiful voice on the radio again, personally.
Well, I am glad that on Saturday afternoons, I have to say, I should be inside reading the results rather than out there in the stands starting fist fights as usual.
It's not Southwark Sierra, but Plymouth Argyle will do.
I listened to the football scores once. I distinctly remember I got as far as Arsenal 1, and then I suddenly remembered I had a life...
But gentlemen all over the land will start to enjoy the football scores in an entirely new way, won't they?
You think she's going to do we start these results with a cutting from the Racing Post? Love her. Sean O'Connor, a former producer of the ITV show Footballers' Wives, is to be the new editor of The Archers. For many Radio 4 listeners, the appointment of a new Archers producer confirmed their worst fears that the BBC are going to keep making the programme. Radio 4 controller Gwyneth Williams said, "The Archers is our most loved and long-standing daily drama, and Sandy, be very careful what you say." Fans fear the appointment may lead to more sensational storylines like the death of Nigel Pargiter, the affair between Lillian Bellamy and Paul Morgan, and the sheer shock value of the notorious incident where Eddie Grundy stored fertiliser near a field drain in a clear breach of DEFRA guidelines. Two points to Jeremy, but two extra points for the Charlotte Green for Susan. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mrs. Galman.
This is from John Smith. He sent it in from the Chester Chronicle. It's an extract of a submission by a brief when a man was arraigned for disorderly conduct. My client very much regrets this incident, Your Honour, especially alleged assault on the police officer. He attributes this to the involuntary flailing of his limbs when his testicles had somehow become twisted when he was being assisted into the police vehicle.
Mr. Ford.
This is from Graham Jackson, and this is from the Hereford Times, and it's on the most read section of their website. In order, 1, double stabbing in Hereford, live blog. Number 2, Hereford double stabbing, update. Number 3, Hereford double stabbing latest, Peterborough connection. Number 4, mystery over reports of attacks in Hereford. Number 5, Hereford deemed to be the safest place to live in the UK.
Mr. Edwards.
This has been sent by Bob Frost, and it's from the Dover Express. A former bar manager has been jailed for 6 months. David Asprey was sacked from his role in charge of the bar at the Castle Inn, Russell Street. He attacked staff with lumps of raw meat, stole a bag of change and set fire to a table. The owner of the Castle Inn said, "It is a shame. I had 50 applications for the job and he was the best one."
Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by someone who doesn't give their name. Their email address suggests that their name is Galata, which is a place. It says here, and it's from the Telegraph website, Brad states that he is not sexually attracted to flatulence per se, but the person releasing the flatulence. Brad, who has a degree in fine arts, describes his first experience of proctophilia when he heard that a girl that he had a crush on in school had passed wind during a lesson. This blew my mind, he said.
Let's take a look at the final scores. Justin and Jeremy have got 13 points, but this week's winners are Susan and Matt with 14. Before we leave you, here is a description of a play spotted on the List magazine's Edinburgh Festival website, sent to us by Nikki Boyle.
Killers is not only a revealing insight into the criminal mind, but a chilling look at ordinary members of the public who, for different reasons, enter into relationships with society's most evil. All ages.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Susan Kalman, Matt Ford, Justin Edwards and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Zep Soames. The chair's script was written by Carl Carter, James Kettle and Tom Neiman, with additional material by James Moran. The producer was Sam Michelle.